I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me today are the ever-zealous assistants to the vocation office, Father Garrett Burns.
Hi! That was my zealous.
That's your zealous.
I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, you're fired. And Father Drew Hoffman.
Hello.
We got to balance the serious ones.
Always the serious ones.
That's right.
Suddenly, people coming to the vocations office has dropped after those two introductions. And we are blessed once again to be joined by the true director of the vocations office, Ooh. Bishop Kemi. Welcome, Whoa. Bishop.
Another job I've been given.
Just what you need.
Hello, hello, hello.
Which means I take no responsibility for either of those two guys. That's all on you, Bishop.
Yes, I can't.
And we are
gladly accepted.
Yeah.
Gladly accepted.
Well, and we are coming to you today from the studio of St. Michael the Archangel. We haven't used him yet, and with everything going on in the world.
Defend us in battle.
Amen. There's plenty of battles out there. We need his help.
Are you aware of all of the debate with the St. Michael prayer of the words you use?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that St. Isidore's, that was a
there's,
scene.
There's not a debate. Like, there are just people that are wrong.
There's Wichita, and then there's everybody else. It's that and holding hands during the Our Father which you can tell if a kid's from Wichita based on.
I love when we pray the St. Michael prayer. In my home diocese, it was encouraged to pray during the liturgy, you know, after the liturgy. Yeah. I really thought about doing that here, but I try to do it whenever, you know, I'm in leading the people in prayer because it just really resonates. I mean, we're going back out into a battle.
Amen.
And we need all the spiritual help we can get. And I love the how we pray the prayer of St. Michael, you know, cast into hell Satan, all his prowl about the world, seeking the ruin of souls.
Those are the words. What are the two? There's several pieces that are debated about.
It's defend or protect is one of them. Safeguard is one of be our safeguard, be our protection or safeguard. And so it just becomes a thing.
Yeah.
And people say it louder. But it's a good problem to have. It's like everybody knows the St. Michael prayer. And even at my 4:30 Mass the other day, I did have music with something. So I just didn't have music at that. So I said the St. Michael prayer as I left. And I always do it daily Mass, but not at Sundays because you have music. And it was great. The whole crowd, I mean, there's a bunch of people. And pretty much everybody knew the St. Michael prayer, even if they weren't really daily Mass people, which I thought was a good.
We always did it at right before if you have music, right before the closing hymn.
Really?
And yeah, we'd say that and then we'd go out with the closing hymns.
It's not a tradition I grew up with. It wasn't in my home parish. I've noticed you doing it at liturgies that you lead, Bishop, and I know other priests that have done it. And it's one of those things that I like the idea of it. I haven't really adopted it into my own devotion just because it's still kind of new to me in that context. I just haven't built that that reflex yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's a powerful prayer.
Mm-hmm.
We at cathedral, we'd always kneel and say St. Michael and Hail Holy Queen. And we still do St. Michael at St. Paul, and we did St. Michael at Izzy's. But I liked that as the way to, especially in the noon Mass, that's kind of, all right, and then you send all this huge crowd of business people and family and stuff like that back out to work.
I'm glad you said that because I'm covering noon Mass at cathedral today. So that's a good reminder.
You gotta remember
for me.
I mean, that's been 3-4 years.
I think they still do it. I think it's the St. Michael's prayer and like the Hail Holy Queen or the Memorare. There's a Marian prayer. I think they do. I think they do both at the end of the noon Mass at cathedral. Yeah. Yep. Pretty sure. Yep. So
we do the St. Michael prayer as we walk out. I remember I didn't do it the first week when I was at Margaret Mary. And my pastor, Father Ned, was like, yeah, it's awkward and it's quiet when you walk out. So just do the St. Michael prayer.
Right. On a daily Mass, you're not going to sing. Might as well fill that space with something fruitful as you walk out. Well, as our only returning guest, Bishop, it seems fitting that we should also return to one of our favorite topics on the podcast that we regularly talk about, and that is books. And what has everybody been reading for the summer? Bishop, what have you been up to reading lately? What's good?
That's a great question. I always hesitate a little bit because I'm not as prolific a reader as perhaps all three of you. But I love reading, and I try to read a little bit every day if I can. Someone once said, if you read 30 or 40 or 50 pages a day, you can really plow through a lot of good books. And so I keep that as a goal, and I don't accomplish it every day, but I try to. So this summer, because I did a little vacation, I was doing a little reading some fiction. So I did. I'm a Jane Austen fan.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah, we just
saw it. I really like her novels. So last summer I read Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. This summer I read Sense and Sensibility.
I've never read that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's her best novel from what I've gathered from the critics. It was fun to read. It's a great story. And then I have Persuasion and Emma, and I haven't read those yet. But so that was my summer break reading or vacation reading. And then because I had some extra time, I bit off something that I'm not sure I'm going to be able to finish anytime soon, a great epic novel. I've had it on my shelf for a number of years. It's David Copperfield.
Ooh, that's my favorite Dickens work.
Yeah.
It's long, but that is my favorite Dickens work.
What a sentence. That's my favorite Dickens work.
What a flex.
And you read it?
Oh, yeah. I love David Copperfield. Okay. I don't actually like most of Dickens' work. He's too wordy for me, but David Copperfield, I really like.
And you know, it was actually his favorite, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He actually wrote in the introduction that of all the books he's ever written, this is his favorite.
Cool.
And it's 1,000 pages.
Yeah, it's a dense thing.
And so I started in, I was on vacation. I did a staycation this year. I stayed at home. I didn't go anywhere, which was really neat. It was good for me. And so I finished Sense and Sensibility, and I had some days left, and I thought, okay, we'll just start this and get going. So I'm in the 600s.
Ooh, well, that's a good chunk.
Far,
yeah.
Pretty far. Yeah. I was plowing through about 100 pages a day.
Oof. Yeah.
Whoa.
And it is a great novel.
It's
so far.
Good people getting better. Good people with real faults, but actually getting better. And that's what I love about that story.
The thing I do like about Dickens, I'm no great Dickens expert, but I do like his novels. I've read a number of them. I haven't read all of them, of course, but his development of characters is really, really good, I think. And I'm kind of drawn to that, how he, you know, brings these characters to life on the page. So those are the two fun reading fictions that I've been reading.
I was literally talking last night with Father Adam Grellinger about David Copperfield, because he got about halfway through it and he didn't like it. So he stopped about halfway through. So let it be known, Grellinger is a quitter.
Not as cultured as the two of them.
That's right. That's right.
I'm going to finish this. Last summer, I started Moby Dick, and I think we may have talked
about that. We did talk about that.
I don't enjoy that one.
I still haven't finished it yet.
Yeah.
I got so tired of all the whaleology. You know? But that's still sitting there waiting for me to finish it. I will finish it one of these days simply because I am not a quitter.
Not like Adam Grellinger.
And I'm going to finish David Copperfield. You know, it may take me another year.
It's worth it, though. Oh, I love that book. That's a favorite. How about spiritually? Anything good spiritually on the bookshelf?
Well, I mean, it's more of things that I have been given to read, you know.
I bet you get a lot of that.
Yeah, I get a lot of books recommended to me. There's some, you know, neuralgic topics in the church today that I've been trying to, you know, just kind of form my mind and heart with. So a big topic is gender ideology.
Oh, yeah.
It's really becoming a movement. It's only affecting a very small number of people, but it's really a movement that I'm sure in all of our work we're going to be encountering more and more of. And it's a bit of a scary thing. So I read a book, an expose on this, a person that wrote, the title of the book is The Question, What is a Woman? And it's basically the question he was asking, you know, all kinds of experts in the field, some pro transgenderism and some anti-transgenderism, and trying to understand what this movement is about. It's a kind of a frightening thing that's coming. It's already here, actually. So I read that book, and that really brought a lot of thought and reflection on, you know, particularly our students in our Catholic schools and those who may be questioning their gender as created by God, and how do we help them do this and give them not affirmation to continue transitioning, but to affirm their being made in the image and likeness of God as male and female.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So these are things that doing. So anyway, those are the kind of things that I've been reading recently. So.
Well, I just started on the spiritual side, Year of the Eucharist. Bishop Barron had a work on the Eucharist that it's, I think, a decade old now. It's been on my shelf for, I've never read it. So I thought, well, now's the time to do that. I'm just picked it up, so I don't I'm sure it's good because Bishop Barron doesn't usually put out low quality stuff, but I don't have a personal opinion of it yet. The surprising one for me, I'm almost done with it. I maybe have 10, 15 pages left on it, but for my fun reading is Moon Over Manifest. Mm. It's a young adult novel.
Is it vampires or something, Chad? What's going on here?
It's written by a Catholic woman here in the diocese, Claire Vanderpool.
Oh, no way.
It's a Newbery Award winner. So, you know, Newbery only awards one book a year of it. And so Claire wrote this book and a while back, it's been out for a while and I've had it on my shelf for a while. And I'll admit, I was a little hesitant to pick it up because it's a junior high novel. And especially at that age, there are some... You can have girl novels and boy novels, and it's a little more girl novel because the main protagonist is a girl and all of that. But it's really good. And so a shout out to Claire. Claire's a wonderful woman. She used to be very involved with the CYO in the diocese, and so wonderful woman, wonderful Catholic woman, but also a very talented author. And I always knew I needed to read Moon Over Manifest, and I knew it would be good because Claire's great and it's a Newbery, but it has exceeded my expectations and how much I've really enjoyed it. It takes place in Southeast Kansas in the 1930s. And so there's references to Pittsburgh and Galena and all of these things going on. And so it's a good summer read. It's been a lot of fun. I'm going to have to write Claire a note as soon as I get done with it. Cause yeah, I knew it would be good. I knew it would be good, but it's been much more fun to read than I expected it to be. So it's been great summer brain candy.
Nice. I think I'm a little embarrassed. I think last time we talked about this, I was just starting Joan of Arc by Mark Twain and now I'm about to finish it, but it's
a good size.
It is. Goodish it's size. It's no David page. Copperfield, but I've really enjoyed that. Again, Mark Twain for me is just easy to read. And
that was his favorite that he wrote.
Which is really interesting from a guy that is, if not anti-Catholic, not really pro-Catholic.
Yeah, right.
This was his favorite work I did a little research and it seemed like he actually did a bunch of back work to he was in France and he was reading archives and it wasn't just like a totally made up. Cause I was always like, is this a real story? How much of, I know what fiction and nonfiction are contrary to what some people will say.
Debatable whether you know that or not.
But it's been enjoyable. And I didn't realize this. We were just driving downtown the other day. I didn't know there's a Joan of Arc statue.
Yeah.
In front of the library.
Yeah. In front of the old library. So yeah.
You know why?
No.
So Orleans, France, is Wichita's sister city. So there is an identical statue of Joan of Arc here in Wichita and in Orleans, France. No way. It was an exchange as part of our sister city program in the 80s or whatever.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
This will be a part of the About 4 O'Clock pilgrimage when we start the pilgrimage portion of About 4 O'Clock
Empire.
A stop
in Orleans. Yeah. I like it.
And then spiritually, I've been reading some articles from Luigi Giussani. So he has one that's called About 4 p.m. actually, which is kind of cool.
Someone sent that to me recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
They loved our podcast, and then they're like, "Have you read Giussani's about?" And so they sent me that book because they were super excited about the connections there.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, similar to what we talked about in the name of the pod, but just
we're pretty much the same.
Yeah, we're just Giussani. There's just this fact of this moment that they can always go back to. That is, has to be experienced, this encounter with Christ. So yeah,
I have been reading, as silly as it sounds, a history of the Diocese of Wichita.
I've read it.
I'm in 1940 right now. So I finished, it was the original one was like up to, I don't know, 32 or something like that. And then there's a second portion that I've gotten started with. I really enjoy it. It's honestly just like a compilation of Catholic Advance articles.
Yep.
Explaining like this person built this church and this person was ordained and this. But I found it fascinating. I've done a lot of driving this summer. And so I've gone through a lot of these small towns in Western Kansas and in the Northeast part of the state and things like that. And so hearing about the original Jesuits and a lot of the early part is about Ponziglione and these early Jesuits and the reservations and things like that. And so I've really, really enjoyed it. And as I've moved in and I've snuck ahead a little bit, you just see like how simple they just talk about Father Capon early on because he was just like a diocesan priest. And when they're writing Catholic Advance articles, as silly as that sounds in 1940 and beyond, they're not overthinking it. It's just like, Emil Capon was ordained. And then to see Ivan Eck, like in this history of the Diocese of Wichita, Ivan Eck
mentioned
in all of these is pretty cool.
That's interesting
too. So I've enjoyed that. I'm reading N.T. Wright's Paul, which is a biography of Paul.
I don't know that
one. My parents gave me, and because I'm at St. Paul, and they had read it, and it's really enjoyable. And it's like a biography. And that's his whole point is we do a lot of theology on Paul and that makes sense. But this is a biography of what can we know about Paul? What are some assumptions we can make? Where exactly does he go? Which is something that I feel like I don't have that good of a grasp on Paul's journeys and his imprisonments.
You want to hear something interesting about that? So 3 or 4 years ago, we did a pilgrimage to Greece it was a Pauline pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. And I was reading N.T. Wright's Paul.
Oh, nice.
While we were in the pilgrimage.
Oh, that'd be cool.
It was awesome. That's the great way to read that book.
Yeah.
Because we were in the very places like Thessalonica and Corinth. And we could read these chapters where he made these visits there.
Wow.
The Areopagus and Athens and awesome.
Sounds like we're making another pilgrimage. About 4 o'clock empire is expanding.
We can make some history of the diocese.
I like all this. And then I'm just finishing up The Bishop of the Abandoned Tabernacle about St. Manuel Gonzalez Garcia, who the story is that he got his assignment as a priest in Spain, got his assignment, and he goes to this church. He's all excited, new priest, basically, and the chapel is just overrun. It's the Eucharist is in there, but it's not taken care of or anything like that. And nobody goes and visits it, and there's weeds growing in it and stuff like that. And he said that's basically the modern world of Jesus here, but nobody pays any attention to him. And so he has this whole theology of the abandoned tabernacle. And it's basically get your butt in front of a tabernacle. Mm. That's honestly the theme of,
good
of
message.
It. And it gets but I loved it. I mean, I read it a lot of this summer because you don't read a lot before you, and it's real small. It's not a very big book at all, but it's a really enjoyable read about the importance of the tabernacle.
That's cool. With the history of the diocese, I read that a few years back because I love history and I love local history. And so my first year as vocation director, that was the summer retreat as we did a history on the diocese. That's and I kind of cool. presented on it. But Ponziglione, he is buried up in Chicago. So he's one of the few grave sites that I've made the point. I went visiting the guys up at Mundelein as I borrowed a car and went over to it's a group burial thing of the old Jesuits. Yeah. He doesn't have an individual tombstone, but Ponziglione was a stud. I mean, you read some of his letters and the things he did, you get a real feel of what missionary work in mm-hmm. Kansas was like. And he went through some tough stuff to bring the gospel to others.
Mater says basically it's Ponziglione is the reason we have the Diocese of Wichita. And we've had a lot, and there was a lot of other things he says, but it's basically him and then everybody else.
Yeah, he founded so many of those parishes out in mm-hmm. southeast Kansas. Mm-hmm. We have his chalice.
Do we really? Yeah, how often do you use that?
Well, from time to time, we have it in the cathedral sacristy in the safe, and we took it with us. We celebrated the 175th anniversary of the parish at St. Paul.
That's crazy.
And he founded that
right
parish.
Mother parish.
And it was the kind of the church, the mother church of the diocese. Mm-hmm. From there. Anyway, we brought the chalice with us, and cool. the people were so amazed.
Yeah.
I said, I have Father Ponsiglione's chalice that we used at that very Mass. That kind of historical connection is really, really, mm-hmm. really amazing.
I'm going to ask today when I'm at the cathedral if they'll at least show me what because I didn't know that.
Yeah,
it's a very
simple chalice. It's not all that remarkable, but we've had it replated, and it's a beautiful little chalice. So.
Very cool. Well, our main topic today is a question that actually comes from a seminarian. So a few weeks back, I was in my office and Colby McKee stopped by the office and we were just kind of chatting. I said, well, we're going to do a podcast in a couple weeks with Bishop Kemi. What should one of our topics be? What should we ask him? And Colby thought for a while, he's like, I don't know. And then he stopped. He was leaving the office. He literally kind of stopped and turned around. And said, well, you know, I know Bishop is busy and he has many important things to do, but I don't really know what his day looks like or what he does from day to day. So you should ask him that. What does a day in the life of Bishop Kemi look like? So shout out to Colby McKee. This is his question. Yeah, I'm sure there are many others who wonder this. I'm not sure that there probably is an quote unquote average day for you, Bishop, but I think a lot of people would be curious what does a day look like for you?
Yeah, well, there's absolutely nothing average about it or typical. Every day is very different. And that's part of the joy of being a bishop. It's because every day is so unique. And there are some similarities, of course, to your days as priests, you know, morning prayer, and I mean, holy hours and mass and all those things that just are the bedrock of our day-to-day life.
Can I ask you, Bishop, for holy hour, are you by nature, we've had this discussion before. There's some guys that do the early morning, some do afternoon, some do late. Where is... For your preference, for yourself, where do you find your holy hour?
I'm a morning person, very early morning person. I after anything after 7 or 8 o'clock at night, I would not recommend you even calling me or or requiring anything of me substantial.
That's so funny.
I shut down about that 7 o'clock. I mean, I'm kind of shutting down pretty much. But if you needed something fresh, and I mean, at 5 o'clock in the morning, oh I'm God. Good to go.
Wow.
Yeah. So I have always been an early riser. It's just who I am by nature. I don't know. I'm not saying that's heroic or that I do this, you know, because, but for me, I get the best. I'd pray the best. I can do the most, you know, in terms of getting really substantial work done, writing, doing all kinds of things, you know, in the morning. And so I get up pretty early. So I might be up at 4:30.
Oh my gosh.
But that means I'm pretty much in bed by 8 o'clock, yeah. You know, so I'm shot after that. So, but yeah, I do my, you know, my best praying in the morning. And so I have tried to live by, as a bishop, I've tried to live by the principle, the first hour of the day belongs to the Lord.
Mm.
And that really seems to work for me. I'll do some meditation, some Lectio Divina, Liturgy of the Hours. If I don't have a public mass, that day I'll offer mass in my private chapel, and actually have come to really love that.
Mm-hmm.
It happens, you know, maybe a third of the time. I love being with Jesus in my chapel and celebrating mass there. And it's just I've become very fond of that place. It's the most important room in my home. And it's right next to my bedroom and study. But yeah, try to give the first hour or more of the day to the Lord. And then beyond that, after that, you know, maybe try to get some exercise. I'm not all that good about that, as you can well test and see. I'm trying to incorporate, you know, some exercise into my life because I want to be healthy and I want to serve a lot longer.
What's your workout regimen? When you're working out, what are you?
So I go to I belong to a club and I go do a. An elliptical.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the elliptical. It really gets the heart rate going, and I really sweat a lot. And I used to run, believe it or not. I used to do a little bit of running.
You do like a half marathon?
I ran three half marathons about 10 years ago.
Oof.
And
really?
Yeah, yeah. I kind of got into that. My bishop, Bishop Rapraki, is an avid runner, and he kind of encouraged me and inspired me to do a little bit of that. So I started and it was not pretty at first. It was never pretty really at all. And I kept wondering, why am I doing this? But I lost a bunch of weight and I was able to increase in endurance and I was able to actually complete 3 half marathons.
Wow.
In about a year and a half's time. So
that's impressive.
I ran a half once, maybe about 10 years ago. And it was as good a shape as I've ever been in. I can't fathom doing it again. But it's a great, like, you got to get over that initial stuff. And once you do, you kind of get into this nice rhythm and you feel good. And it's just a different, during the pandemic, that's what I did. I just ran every day. And that's a cool.
I like running. And I did a half marathon a year ago and I hated it. Yeah, I did not like it.
Yeah, one of my worst Lents ever was I said I was going to run every day, even if it was just a couple miles, and I hated it. I never got to the enjoyment phase. But
have you ran a half?
No.
You're the only one in this room that has not run a half marathon.
By far the best athlete in this room has not run a half marathon. Right. That's very funny.
Might be the smartest man.
There you go, exactly.
Garrett went and supported me when I ran it.
I love half marathon. I love going to watch. Like at Drew's, they had Chick-fil-A at the end.
He's just waiting at the end. He's got Chick-fil-A and a beer. I've never been more tired in my whole life.
One of our other friends like went and ran with him, and he was praying rosaries just to like pump him up, and I'm like, I'll see you at the end. I got to get the sandwich.
It's a time in my life that I can't hardly even remember anymore, but it was only 10 or 11 years ago. Yeah. But so a little bit of exercise, and then the office opens at 9, and so I try to get in there around that time. But I usually have some time in the morning at home where I can write some letters or respond to emails, do some homily preparation. That's a thing, too, as a bishop, really requires a lot of time because I'm often required or requested to speak.
Yeah.
And it's not just homilies. It's like give talks to groups. And I spend a lot of time preparing those kind of talks. So that takes up a chunk of time.
Well, then there's a little bit of a higher bar expectation there. You know, I can walk into a talk, I'm like, yeah, Father Chad doesn't know anything, but the bishop, you need more facts and more preparation for those sorts of things.
You really, you know, can't do it. I wish I could extemporaneously. And I have to rely on notes and a text sometimes. More often than not, I don't have a good recall, so I'll have to write some quotes down and stuff like that. But it is really important that what you say is, because people are going to listen, mm-hmm. and they are listening, mm-hmm. and they're going to quote you. Mm-hmm. So you really have to be accurate as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Or to admit that maybe you're not have all the facts yet or whatever. But so a lot of time preparing talks. And I've learned to do that kind of on the run too, because you know it takes a lot more time than. Mm-hmm. But I've learned in my life that the best time for that is a morning time. It's funny, I'll have a homily or a talk, and I'll be getting ready to go to bed, and I think, boy, I should stay up and get this done. But I've learned that it's better to go to bed, get up real early in the morning. And it's funny, when I wake up, it's there, and it's just a gift. It's just a grace that the Lord gives me.
That's cool.
I wouldn't have known what I was going to really say the night before. When I woke up the next morning, it was all, at least in a seed way.
Right. I'm the opposite. Like with homilies, I can't put two thoughts together when I wake up in the morning. And so if my homily is not done the night before, it's going to be touch and go in the morning. I can't think in the morning. I'm envious of that grace and that gift, Bishop.
One of the great blessings of my priesthood is I've had very few 8 a.m. or earlier. I mean, cathedral is usually I had the noon. Izzy's, I had the 9:09. St. Paul, I have 11:45. And I have some easy masses and stuff like that. I never have to think.
You come alive at like 9 or 10 o'clock.
In all seriousness, I'll work in the office later in the evening. I'll do yard work later in the evening after it even gets dark. I'll respond to emails and stuff like that. Just the body works a little bit.
I'm more similar to that. Different. Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, I'm more of a morning person for sure. Right, yeah, just wake up and go. And especially Margaret Mary, like our office barely is even open until 10. Just kind of, I think, more of a Hispanic mindset, yeah. stuff mm-hmm. later in the day. So if I can get in the morning, I can really, like you're saying, be a lot more effective and productive early in the morning rather than late.
When you're in the office, what does that mean? What does that look like for Bishop to be in the office?
Well, it's the day is often full of appointments. Everybody wants to talk to the bishop, everybody. And so there's a lot of requests for appointments. I have a wonderful staff, Tracy, my executive secretary, and now Father Jacob Carline, my priest assistant. They manage my schedule for me. And I feel a little embarrassed about that I can't manage it myself. But I've learned the hard way, just allow them to make those kind of things, appointments, and to schedule this out in a way that I can handle it. I could be meeting with people all day long and requests for attendance at various functions. And I want to do everything, and I can't do everything. I have to be very prudent about, you know, what I say yes to, so that I have time in between to do some of the preparation for talks or write letters or respond to emails. The emails never stop. Again, we have a nice system in the office where most of the emails go to my staff. They filter them to me in appropriate ways and times to give me the time to make best responses I can.
I think that would be, I would imagine, one of the hardest parts about being bishop. As you were saying, there are so many good things going on and people want the bishop to be there, and understandably so, and right and just. And you want to be there and you want to be at all of these things. But the fact is, there's so much. And I know, like, my temptation would be, well, I got a free hour here, and so I can go something here. But you also need that time to prepare for those other meetings, to do the emails, to rest, to prepare that. And so I feel that would be one of the harder parts of just making those judgment calls. Well, what do I go to? What do I don't? How do I tell no to these? Because they're all good things.
Very good things. And, you know, I've learned that oftentimes the bishop's presence at these functions and events just make all the difference, yeah. and mean so much to the people. If you show up for a parish dinner or a parish festival or some other event, gosh, the bishop's here. I mean, we must be important to him, you know, and they are. I mean, they truly are. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm an introvert, believe it or not, but I love being at these things. I get a lot of joy at that, but I also know that I need to have solitude and I need to kind of regroup. And that's what I do in my home and quiet. But then I'm ready to go back out and do all kinds of things too and be at different places. Every time I open the Catholic Advance and I see all these advertisements for various parish functions or whatever, I would say, oh, I want to go there. I want to go there. And my staff says, Bishop, are you sure you can do it? I said, don't hold me back. Let me go. Because then I'll say, well, maybe I've overextended myself a little bit. Because I do get tired. I mean, I'm almost 62, and I want to. I've got 13 more years, you know, and maybe even 14. And I want to be energized and ready for the years ahead, and to do the big things, and to be a part of all this. But I have to pace myself. I've learning sometimes the hard way. But the days are typical in one way because there's a lot of appointments, phone calls, emails. I try to also, as I don't do this as much as I'd like to. I'd like to get out of my office and to be out, like to go visit our directors and to get around to see what they're doing and just have, you know, brief conversations with them. Of course, I have to, I rely on Father David Leese, the Vicar General and Moderator of the Curia, to manage the staff at the Chancery. But I'm convinced that the best service that I can give the diocese is not to be behind the desk, is to be out. And like Pope Francis says, get out, go out. And I love that. I love that. And I want to do as much of that as I can.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that. Any follow-up questions?
Do you have a driver?
I do. I suppose you're not talking about a club.
No, yeah,
that's you. That'll move on to my question.
I have one of those too, but I do. I'm blessed. I know bishops today are not always not so blessed with people that can take care of those things like driving you here and there. But I'm blessed. I have Father Jacob Carline, who is my priest assistant. He works full-time in the office. And he and Tracy, they take care of a lot of the managing the mail and the emails. So we work, the three of us together, very closely on that. But then he comes with me pretty much on all the road trips. He's also an MC. And so he prepares, you know, the liturgy and works with the pastor or the priest on that end and gets everything ready. And then he drives me. And I let him do that. I offer, if it's a long trip, to take, you know, to give him a break. But he seems to be pretty capable of driving long distances. And I don't sleep in the car. I think he will testify to that. So we talk a lot. And it gives me time to think. And we pray. We pray the rosary. And sometimes the liturgy of the hours. And just kind of converse about things in the diocese, and even on a more personal level. I enjoy having him with me, and I feel really blessed to have him. So,
how much golfing have you done?
I have clubs. I haven't used them for 12 years. Sorry.
Because he's mastered it. He, you know, yes. He hit the perfect score and just put the clubs on the back burner.
I'm horrible at golf.
I have Archbishop Carlson's clubs, the former Archbishop of St. Louis.
You have his clubs?
I have his clubs in his bag and everything, because he was playing and he parred the first hole, parred the second hole, and there was lightning. And so he had to get off the course and he quit that day. He said, I'm done with this. His body was not, and he's had a number of different health issues and things like that. He said, I'm done. I saw him. And we were talking about golf. He's like, do you just want my clubs? And it was awesome. And so now I use a few of them. And like Father Bergkamp has a few of them. I think Father Clay might even have a couple of the clubs. And cool. I just have this bag. It says Archbishop Robert Carlson. And so I understand.
I remember him when he was still Archbishop and you were a deacon. He always talked so highly of you when you were his deacon at the cathedral.
He's the man. He really is an incredible man. He'll do a great service to the country, just doing retreats and stuff, which is now is kind of retired.
That's awesome.
And he's been here to do a retreat. He did an Encine Jesu retreat.
Oh, did he? Oh, I didn't know
that. A year ago. Yeah, it was well attended.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Bishop, would you provide us with the final word today?
Yes. Today, as this, we're recording this, is the memorial of St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, also formerly known as Edith Stein, and she said this: do not accept anything as the truth if it lacks love, and do not accept anything as love which lacks truth.
See you next week.